It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Raised in the Garfield neighborhood, he would go on to create window displays at Gimbel's downtown, create illustrations for children's books, and design album covers. However, Moselle Thompson might be the most famous Pittsburgh artist you've never heard of. A current exhibit of his album covers at Most Wanted Art could change that. Joining us in Studio A to help us rediscover Moselle Thompson is Most Wanted Art resident artist Jay Malls, who curates the exhibit. Jay Malls, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you for having me.
In addition to what was mentioned in the introduction, who was Moselle Thompson?
There's a lot of very rich content. He was born in 1926 in the Hill District. He attended palette Saturday classes, Tamara Shammer classes at the Carnegie Museum within the first year, 10 years that they were offered. 1931 to 1941 is when he attended. By 1940, his family had relocated to Garfield. There he attended Peabody High School, where he was taught by Jean Thoburn. She is a woman who began teaching at Peabody as early as 1912. Her students included Mary Shaw, Louise Pershing, George Heppenstall, Gene Kelly. She was a founding artist, founding member of the Pittsburgh Center for the Arts and the Pittsburgh Watercolor Society, and she had a big impact on Moselle Thompson. His senior year at high school, he was 17 years old. He won first place awards for painting in the Scholastic Awards, received a scholarship to go to New York to study at Parsons School of Design. He had an interest in fashion design, which was perhaps his primary interest, even more so than illustration or painting. He had been published in pages of Mademoiselle magazine when he was 17 years old. It's November 1944 issue.
Was there a particular signature item that he was known for?
He's perhaps best known for the illustrated version of Lift Every Voice and Sing. So Lift Every Voice and Sing is a very popular hymn. It's sometimes referred to as the African-American National Anthem. It was written by James Johnson and I believe it was his brother. But it's a very significant, you know, hymn, musical piece. And I don't know of any other illustrated versions of it prior to Moselle Thompson's, but it's very influential. It was cited by New York Times. It was on their top 10 list of illustrated books for 1970. And it's influenced a lot of other African-American illustrators. There have been other versions since. Lift Every Voice and Sing is what he was working on at the time of his death. It has a 1969 copyright, but it very likely didn't come out until 1970. He passed on, I've seen the date of his death reported as December 6th, 1969, and December 7th, so he likely died, you know, late in the night, early morning. So that book, you know, was uncompleted. And his sister, Agatha Thompson, I can't remember her married name, she completed the book. She was an artist somewhat as well.
And he's as prolific an artist as Andy Warhol, and yet he is not, doesn't seem to be mentioned as often as Andy Warhol. Why is that?
He's primarily known amongst African-American illustrators. In Pittsburgh, I'm sure there's people across the city who remember him, but as far as any type of representation of his work, you know, you can't go to the museum, you can't go to the History Center, you can't go anywhere and see his work, aside from Most Wanted Fine Art, you know, right now.
Describe this journey of yours to discover Thompson. What sparked your interest in Moselle Thompson?
I have been collecting records since I was 15. I'm 40 now, so it's I've been collecting records longer than I haven't been collecting records. I developed an interest in local records over the years. When I was younger, I grew up in Swissville. I used to shop at the Record Hut. It's a lot of real interesting kind of music and record culture just out of my neighborhood, which I wasn't aware of until later on in my life. And I would find these kind of little artifacts from the city just in the course of the past 25 years, and I was always very curious about them and just developed into an interest of mine. So when I found it was a Martin Luther King record, when I first became aware of Moselle Thompson, he had illustrated it. It was a series of five records, which I wasn't aware of at first, which he had illustrated the entire series. Those are included in the show. And there's a small biographical paragraph about him on the back that says he was born in Pittsburgh and, you know, talked about his career.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're rediscovering Pittsburgh artist Mozell Thompson with Most Wanted Art resident artist Jay Malls, who curated the current exhibit, The Album Art of Mozell Thompson, the LP cover illustrations, 1953 to 1970. Tell us about the current exhibit of his work that you're curating at Most Wanted Art.
Well, it's primarily album covers. That's the most accessible examples of his art. With my record collecting and DJ background, it just kind of makes sense to present it like that. I do have some book and magazine illustrations on display as well. There's definitely aspects of his career that I am not that familiar with. Like, a lot more research could be done, and they're not really represented in the show. But we have over 100 examples of things that he's illustrated, unique examples.
And we've talked about the variety of things that illustrations that and work that he has done. How did Mozell Thompson begin designing album covers? Where did that start?
The earliest one I've identified so far was in 1953, and it was Robert Shaw Corral, Porgy and Bess, for RCA Victor.
So how did someone know that he was the guy to approach to do that?
He'd been in New York since 1945. Evidence shows that he'd been living between New York and Pittsburgh. He would come back in the summers, create window displays, fashion ads at Gimbel's. 1948, he went overseas, and he'd won another scholarship at Parsons, and he'd studied in Rome and Paris, and that's actually documented in a three-page feature in the February 1949 issue of Ebony Magazine. He was pretty well known for a young artist, and even after that, he'd come back to Pittsburgh, worked at Gimbel's. There's a 1952 issue of the Gimbelite, which shows him painting the display on the wall. And then 1953, we have the first album. He did just that one in 1953 that I'm aware of, a few in 1955, a few more in 1957, and then he was extremely prolific in 1958 and 1959. By 1960, he had illustrated over 70 album covers, which I find it very hard to believe he's not the most prolific African-American illustrator in his field at that point.
And back when he was doing them, album covers could really make you a known commodity, because in the pre-CD cassette days, I mean, albums were it. If you wanted to own a piece of recorded music, you bought an album, and, you know, we're talking about 33 and a third LPs. Mm-hmm. And so the things that they're packaged in are large, so there's all this room to strut your stuff. And talk about how important that was as a template for him to express himself and to show the world what he was capable of.
Well, it dates back even further than that, to 78. There really wasn't much artwork included on album covers until the latter part of the 1930s. And in 1939, it became standard to have art on albums. And the first artist who put artwork on an album was Alex Steinweiss. He's the father of album cover illustration. He didn't retire until 1973. He may have illustrated as many as 2,500 albums. He hired a lot of the first generation artists, Jim Flora, who's very popular, very well documented. There's a book on his album cover illustrations. Then you have David Stone Martin, who's a huge name in illustration across the board. He may have illustrated as many as 400 album covers. Then in 1949, Warhol leaves Pittsburgh and goes to New York, immediately begins illustrating album covers, which, you know, is said to be the only medium that he practiced for the entirety of his professional career from 1949 until 1987. And he only illustrated as many as 60 album covers, a lot of which he had no involvement in because he had a team of artists making them for him. And they even include images that were appropriated, like from his films and whatnot, into that number. So I've identified 120 plus albums that Mozell Thompson has illustrated between 1953 and 1969.
And what did this kind of work do for an artist's credibility? Was this considered to be high-end stuff?
He illustrated a lot of classical albums. He was very painterly, and it lended itself to that. A lot of, like, Morton Gould, Arthur Fielder, Boston Pops, and things of that nature. And he did have a good reputation. I found some evidence, the Billboard magazine article from 1965, that it was an RCA-sponsored exhibit in Chicago. It was like, you know, the original artwork used for classical albums in an art show. And that's actually the only information I could find to any exhibition that he participated in.
And in addition to the classical artists, what were some of the other artists that he did cover art for?
Well, most of the work was for RCA Victor up until 1959. For RCA, he started off with Porgy and Bess, which, you know, is a musical opera. Did a lot of classical, did a lot of 1950s popular music, orchestras and, you know, whatnot. You know, Arthur Fielder did a lot of classical albums, but if it wasn't classical compositions, then it was put into a popular category. Did a lot of international, like ethnic folk music. In 1959, he did Lightnin' Hopkins for Tradition Records. That's a favorite of mine. Just a few other jazz artists, unfortunately. Cootie Williams, he did for Warwick Records. He started working for Verve in 1962. He did a Francis Fay album. He did four Jerry Mulligan albums that had been reissued in 1962 and 63. In 1968, he did an Ella Fitzgerald record. He did some work for MGM as well, Hank Williams. He also did Jimmy Rogers for RCA Records.
Isaac Hayes, Shaft.
You know, what's interesting is before the Shaft film franchise existed, it was just a novel written by the author Ernest Tidyman. And the first edition published in 1970 had a Moselle Thompson illustration on the dust cover, which is on display. And we're actually raffling that off. If I could get you to sign in when you come to the gallery and give me some documentation that people came, we're going to put you in a raffle for a first edition of Ernest Tidyman's novel Shaft with the Moselle Thompson dust cover.
That would be a great thing to have. Did Moselle Thompson know Andy Warhol?
I found no evidence that they knew each other, but they were one grade apart. They went to neighboring high schools. Warhol graduated from Schenley. Moselle Thompson graduated from Peabody. They both took the Saturday morning classes in the Carnegie Museum of Art's Saturday morning program. They both studied with Joseph Fitzpatrick. I find it very hard to believe they weren't in the same room at the same time.
And what is the signature work that Moselle Thompson is known for?
Dancers. Ever since he was a little kid, he liked to depict people dancing, and it's found throughout his work. He primarily worked in watercolor early on. I think that was the influence of Gene Thoburn. But there's a ton of different mediums that he works in that are on display. There's washes, there's pen and ink drawings, there's charcoal drawings, there's oils, watercolors, you know.
And what was Moselle like as a person?
It is very difficult to find personal information about him. So I was very curious myself. And this past weekend, we debuted for Unblurred on First Friday, and then we had an opening reception during the day on Saturday. And a lot of his family traveled from all over the country to be at the exhibit. We had people from California, Louisiana, New York, New Jersey. We had great nieces and great nieces and nephews, and it was really beautiful. I'd met his niece Kim, who was only 10 when he passed away, and she remembered him. That was very early on when I first met his family. And over the weekend, I got to meet some other nieces and nephews, and they just had these really great recollections of him. He brought them to New York, took them to galleries and museums. You know, they said how they taught them how to see art. He was supposedly very generous. He would come home from New York in Christmas time and bring everybody gifts, and everybody was excited because he had all these things you couldn't get in Pittsburgh. His nephew said how he took him to see My Fair Lady, which, you know, he really enjoyed the experience, but he was, you know, saying how he came home and everybody's like, what'd you do in New York? And he's like, oh, what to see? I don't know, My Fair Lady. And they're like, what are you? This is not like the coolest thing for a high school kid to go to, I suppose. And a very funny story. He's like, one time he came back and he had The Natural. And the guy's like, do you know what The Natural is? And I was like, yeah, I know what The Natural is. And he's like, nobody in Pittsburgh had seen The Natural at that point. We had no idea what he was doing with his hair. So, there's a lot of great stories. He seems like he was very, just generous guy. Even his sister told me a similar story. When she graduated high school, for her graduation present, he brought her up to New York and he took her around and just showed her the different neighborhoods and how people lived,
After all the research you've done, Jay, what is your takeaway about Moselle Thompson and the times in which he lived and what he was able to accomplish within those parameters?
It's kind of hard for me to say, being that that was before, that I wasn't alive then. But I would assume he definitely had faced some adversity, probably faced some bigotry. But I think, the first and foremost, he was just very talented. His sister said when their father came to Pittsburgh from Texas, he was trained as an architect and he couldn't get a job. He worked in the post office to support a family of 8 children. And then I asked, what about your brother? Like, did he have any problems getting hired for jobs? And she was like, nah, he was just great. They wanted him to work. And then, I had put a reporter in touch with her, and then he contacted her brother as well. And her brother kind of told the other side of the story, where he didn't want to go to lunch and didn't want to go to network with these people. And once they found out he was African-American, he might lose the job or he might take a pay cut or something like that, we have pretty much diametrical kind of opposing sides of that story. I would just assume that it was hard, and he was extremely fortunate to have accomplished what he did. And, I think it says something about the quality of his work,
And you have assembled or accumulated all of this Moselle Thompson work. Beyond this exhibit, what will you do with what you've collected?
I want to find a home for it. I don't want to put these records back in my house. I don't want to box them up, and they'll do much more good just being accessible out in the public where people can see them. I acquired most of them on my own. I got a small grant to put this together. I want to say thank you to the Sprout Fund, because I would not have been able to do this without them. And with some of that money, I was able to acquire the finite number of albums that I couldn't find. And most of these things were in thrift stores and at flea markets, and it's music from the 1950s for the most part. There's a not as large an audience for that as there once was, so these things are just kind of sitting around,
And are more people discovering Moselle Thompson's work?
Well, my intention is to increase the awareness and just the promotion of his work. When I first started doing this, there's a user-driven website called Discogs, which was one of the resources I used to find out the information. When I first started doing this in January of 2013, I believe there were between 10 and 20, maybe, entries on Discogs. And I've watched that number grow to about 60 now. And I think that's just, as time goes by, more and more information will be put on the internet. And, I've watched that information grow that much in the course of 2 years.
We've been talking with Most Wanted Art resident artist Jay Malls, curating the exhibit of Moselle Thompson's work, particularly when it comes to his album covers. And the exhibit will continue all through this month, correct?
It ends on November 30th. The galleries open every Sunday from 12 to 6 p.m. We have some special events going on. Next Sunday, we have a reading of a Moselle Thompson illustrated children's story, Pumpkin Seeds. And then we just added Small Business Saturday, which is Saturday, November 29th. So every Sunday till the end of the month, plus Saturday, November 29th.
Jay Malls, again, thank you so much for being with us here on Essential Pittsburgh. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
And thank you for listening to today's edition of Essential Pittsburgh. If you missed any portion of the program or want to revisit past segments, you can go to our website at WESA.FM. For now, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. See you next time on another edition of Essential Pittsburgh.